So this is an informal talk. Nothing is like really supposed to be original. I mean, if somehow I miraculously get through all the stuff I planned, maybe I'll say something about my own work at the end, but probably that won't happen. So, and maybe I should also mention like the general perspective. There are these lectures and also some notes somewhere floating around from these lectures that David Ben-Zvi gave at this Theory X conference. I think these are kind of like this perspective is sort of that flavor, I would sort of attribute it. Okay, so I'll start just saying some rough things. So, an n-dimensional topological field theory, let me just write TFT. So there's this kind of famous perspective that it's determined by sort of what it assigns to a point. I won't even say what this sort of assignment is supposed to be, but the point is some thing which, you know, I'm going to be totally informal about the kind of foundational stuff, but it's like an n minus one category. And this is the sort of category of boundary conditions. And I'll kind of try to explain concretely why it should be such a thing, in a concrete example, because I don't want to have all the n's and n minus ones. But from this data, in particular, you're supposed to be able to build a whole bunch of other stuff. So one thing is if you reduce on the n minus one sphere, this is sort of like the space of local operators of your field theory. And this should be an EN algebra, sort of just in vector spaces. So this just means, you know, there's sort of n directions in your topological field theory that you can take products in. Local operators. And more generally, if you just pick some arbitrary k, you'll produce an EK monoidal N minus K category. And these are the codimension K defects. Again, I'll try to explain sort of why you should believe all these numbers in a concrete example in a second, but roughly the prescription for how you produce all these things just starting from this guy is the following, that at each step, if you want to know what you would assign to a K-sphere, you can compute endomorphisms in the category sort of one level up. Of this particular object, this is sort of the unit. So all of these things are really kind of unital guys, and their units are given by the disks that bound these or that these spheres bound. And the kind of motivation for this is basically just the fact that you can construct the spheres as these kind of iterated suspensions. Like this, glue two disks together along the boundary and gives a higher dimensional sphere. Okay, so let me try to write down a concrete example and fix some of the numerology. So let's consider one of the main things we've been studying in the seminar is Rozansky-Witten theory, which is, I would call it sort of B-twisted. 3D n equals 4. So this is a three-dimensional topological field theory. And its target is given by some holomorphic symplectic manifold. And let's just take it to be a cotangent bundle. And we had this kind of ansatz in this case. I guess Justin explained in some of his talks that Z of a point was like coherent sheaves of categories on this sort of base of this cotangent bundle. So this is a two-category. So why should the boundary conditions in a 3D TFT be a two-category? It's because the morphisms are lines that interpolate between two open regions of the two-dimensional boundary. And morphisms between morphisms are kind of points that interpolate between two lines that divide two of these open regions. So some kind of picture like you have your 3D, you have some boundary, and then you have, you know, two objects of your boundary condition category, and then you might have two morphisms, and you might have some kind of two morphism between. So if we try to do this procedure now, the sort of first thing we construct, if we just take the zero sphere, which is two points, is just sheaves of categories on the product. And this is E1 monoidal under convolution. And this is kind of in keeping with our convention here. If we construct the gadget on S1, I guess we've talked about this a fair amount, but we expect to find coherent sheaves on the sort of small loop space of Y. So by this, I mean, somehow I think I'm just not going to explain this, because if you hadn't seen it before, probably you won't understand. And if you have, then you have. But this is like the minus one shifted, the sort of total space of the minus one shifted tangent bundle to Y, this space of formal loops. And this guy, this is kind of E2 monoidal in, and it's just a usual category. So again, let me just say, so these are kind of codimension one. So these are the surface defects or surface operators, and these are the line defects or line operators.
What is E1 E2 monoidal?
So you could think of usual monoidal as sort of like having an algebra structure on your category, this kind of 2-to-1 map that comes from bringing things together. E2 means you kind of have two directions to move around in, like the way that codimension 2 defects would be, say if you had lines in 3D, or in general EN.
Two directions might not commute?
Yeah, exactly, in a sort of tricky way. Like they'll kind of naively commute, because you can, of course, move things past each other. But then if you kind of go all the way around, maybe there's something kind of funny, some kind of monodromy or something. Okay. So I think like these kinds of things we sort of discussed in the seminar already. So what one thing I want to point out is that in good cases in theories like this, you often actually have a kind of framed E2 structure, and this corresponds to the fact that there might actually be some kind of deformation of your line operator category to the sort of the S1 equivariance. And this comes from the fact that in this situation, that this guy has a sort of natural deformation to the Durham stack, this space called the Durham stack of Y, but where this deformation is sort of like an even shifted deformation. So let me say over the S1 equivariant cohomology of a point. And throughout, I'm just going to call the generator H bar to be suggestive of this kind of omega background quantization story. So H bar is sort of our degree two parameter, quantization parameter.
In good situations, makes it some conditional of y.
Yeah, so I told myself I just wouldn't get into talking about stuff like that. At this level of generality, I think, you know, for y, any kind of reasonably finite space, it's kind of going to be true. But in general, there are some anomalies that come up. And in like the higher dimensional situations, those things are actually important. But I have more questions than answers about those things. And I'd be happy to talk about them. But you know, for the sake of just trying to sort of give this schematic story, I'm going to maybe overlook things like that. So this deformation looks like coherent sheaves on the Durham stack, which is known to be like D modules. But if we remember it sort of as a whole family, then it sort of looks like I'll write DH bar of Y. And by this, I mean sort of sheaves of modules over the sort of Ries algebra of differential operators on Y. So this is some kind of family of categories over the space. And the central fiber is like this. The generic fiber is like D modules. So in here, we have some object Z of the two disk. And this is just the actual algebra itself. You know, it's a module over itself, of course. And so our local operators, this usually would be an E3 algebra. But if we kind of turn on this S1 equivariance, it kind of gets deformed just to an E1 algebra. That's kind of a funny feature of the situation. This is this omega background story. So it's endomorphisms in this category of this object, which is just global sections over Y of these Ries differential operators. So this is sort of, let me say, sort of E3 deforming to E1 algebra. These are our local operators. And somehow this is like this is supposed to be kind of a familiar thing. You know, in the case that Y was maybe like the flag variety, this could be like just the algebra of, you know, U H bar G specialized at the central character of the trivial representation. And if we took Holms from some other objects in this category, or from this to some other objects in this category, the global sections of those modules would be like this under Balanced and Bernstein, these typical sort of like modules for this enveloping algebra. Okay, so you know, in this setting, you can see this is related to a lot of kind of traditional things in representation theory, kind of a standard story. Are there any questions? Okay, great. So, well, maybe not great, but
this is related to this like canonical quantization of, you know, local operators in the 3D theory that like Bayesian and Abbey and Tudor and other.
Yeah, and everyone, yeah, this omega background story, sure. Yeah. Maybe goes back to, I don't know, Dunya, Nekrasov, you know. Great. Okay, so this seminar is really about sort of twisted Rozensky-Witten theory. This is the thing we kind of don't understand as well, which I would call maybe a-twisted. (clears throat) 3D n equals 4. And sort of there's this kind of issue that here, we don't really know what we want to assign to a point. And that's sort of, this question is sort of, this is the topic of the seminar, at least it was sort of in the beginning. And I don't intend to really answer this question, but I want to introduce sort of a bunch of more compatible examples related to these things. And maybe it will kind of inform some perspectives on what you might want to put here. Maybe not. I mean, we'll see. Okay, great.
You say a twisted n equals 4, talking about double H duties, or you're trying to do similar models?
Yeah, I guess at this level of generality, sigma models would be fine. So maybe, again, I should say two, let me again assume, say, it's a cotangent bundle. But maybe, you know, Y could be something pretty weird. I mean, it could be just a quotient stack, but it could be nonlinear. I think it's not going to be super important for what I say. I mean, some of the results are only going to be true in certain cases, of course. Okay. So the perspective I want to emphasize is that in certain theories that are kind of A-twisted, or also just maybe honestly not topological but holomorphic, rather than reducing on things like S1, we might, as a sort of heuristic, try to make sense of like reductions on things like punctured disks, or like make sense of what gets assigned to disks. And I think I personally learned this way of thinking from sort of this line operator conjecture of Phil Tseng and Justin, which I'll state in this language in a little bit, but I'm not really sure who sort of started thinking about this kind of thing first. So we don't know what to assign to a point, we don't know what to assign to S0, but we can try to assign something to S1, but the thing I was just saying is, well, maybe instead we should kind of think about it as the punctured disk. And the thing that we assign is the category of D modules on the algebraic loop space into Y. Here K is like Laurent series, as usual. And this, you know, we want to say, in analogy with here, that this is sort of an E2 category. That's not quite going to be true, but what is true is this is sort of a factorization category. Again, it's unital, and the sort of unit, I guess I should write it, I want to think of it as being assigned to this sort of algebraic disk, and it's this guy, so this is some object in here, where iota is just the inclusion of yo into yk.
What was yk again? What was yk again?
Yk, sorry, so y is the Lagrangian that we fixed, so it's something like n mod g, and y sub k, it's like y of k, it's the algebraic loops into k. So k here, it's like the Laurent series points of, yeah, the sort of usual. This is just the usual story. I'm sure everyone here is, well, maybe not everyone, but a lot of people here are quite familiar with this. And so when
this one was y of o, not y of 0, okay.
Yeah, this is y o. Yeah, this is like o inside of k, power series inside of Laurent series. That's right. Yeah. And so the idea is now if we try to do this analogous local operator calculation like this. So again, there's a sort of S1 deformation coming from turning on this loop rotation. So I'll include that as a possibility here. So again, it's sort of palms in this category between things like this. And the answer that we find is this homology, possibly C star equivariant. Maybe I should say, in analogy with these two pictures, I think of this as being sort of assigned to the formal bubble instead of really S2, maybe being C star equivariant. And this is the homology, C star equivariant, of the space of maps from the formal bubble. So this is a pretty familiar thing. This is this kind of, well, maybe I'll say, so this is in. So in analogy with the fact that this wasn't quite an E2 category, I mean, this actually will be an E3 algebra. Maybe I'll write it like this. So this is an E3 algebra, local operators in a 3D TFT. But it sort of naturally comes up as sort of looks like an E1 algebra, sort of in factorization algebras on some, you know, reference curve, let's call it X. I mean, if I want it to be C star equivariant, I guess maybe I should say this is just A1 and C star here. And now, I was mentioning here you can get modules, so let me just try to kind of explicitly spell that out. So this guy's gonna sort of act on any Hom space, let me call the line operator category C from this unit guy to any other object. Well, let me flip the order. Any object M this will sort of act on such a thing. And a typical example you might imagine is if we took M to be like sort of the differential operators on YK, even though that's not sort of the best behaved object, the type of thing we'd find is the space of sections, sort of O sections over YK of this unit guy, and this is sort of known to be the CDOs to Y. Let me write it. Pardon me?
Which M was this?
This is for, let me. D. HR. Y. And this is in. I'll raise the board and kind of a second. And this was e.g. for M equal to global differential operators on global differential operators on YK. So you should think like that's induced from just O on YK. And so when you Hom out of it, you just get Homs out of O in the O module category, which is this section. Similarly to like how you Homing out of this guy would give you this sort of sections functor in the usual Balanced and Bernstein setup. So let me draw a kind of picture of what's going on here. I'll at least try to draw some pictures. So in both these examples, these are kind of parallel examples. The sort of same thing's going on. this looks pretty central, I guess. So we kind of have this. Three-dimensional space. And in the bulk, the local operators are kind of what we're assigning to the two-sphere, which we're picturing as glued out of a kind of a pair of disks. And then the modules come from some kind of geometric quantization of some kind of disks intersecting the boundary. And M is kind of determining the boundary condition here. And then here in the bulk, we have, I don't know if I gave this guy a name, this algebra here. But maybe I want to emphasize the following kind of this isn't really even a philosophical point, it's just like a calculus. So we can summarize the data that gives rise to this algebra in this module, sort of, again, internal to sort of E2 algebras or factorization algebras or whatever, by writing sort of, what did we choose? We chose a category, which is sort of a factorization category. We chose some kind of unit object, and then maybe we chose some kind of other object, or maybe a factorization functor to vect, so some object in the dual category. And this sort of gave rise to, this gave rise to the action of N C of U, which was our local operators, on this kind of Hom from U. Okay, so now let me try to just make some quick comments about like this setting. So in addition to, and like what people are kind of thinking about in this setting. So somehow, this Rozensky-Wynn theory has been around for a long time. I think the understanding of A-twisted 3D n equals 4 really improved a lot after this BFN paper. And so there's been a lot of recent work on trying to sort of, I mean, well, do lots of things. So let me just write a few examples. So in addition to these sort of chiral boundary conditions that give these factorization algebras, which are modules for these kind of E3 algebras, there are also topological boundary conditions in analogy with here that should produce some things that are kind of analogous to sort of category O in the more traditional Rozensky-Witten theory setting, say in the case where Y is G mod B. And so there's this work kind of, let me say, sort of conjecture slash theorem. I'm going to call all of these this just to be sort of neutral in various people's level of like how much things have been proved and blah, 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 blah. But so there's work of Ben Webster and also Justin and Joel and Alex Weeks, which sort of says, well, there should be some category of modules that you can associate in this kind of A-twisted theory to some space Y. And, you know, optimistically, there should be some kind of equivalence to a category of modules that you can associate to the kind of symplectic dual variety in the B setting, where this is sort of a more traditional category O, say in the sense of BLPW, or, you know, whatever, BGG. So this is one kind of direction people have thought about, like, oh, there should be some module categories for these algebras. They should match up on these two sides. This is like one manifestation of 3D mirror symmetry. So another kind of conjecture slash theorem, which in some sense I mentioned, is this result of BFN. And this just says that these algebras in some situations can actually just be identified. So the point is that, just write it, ZA in the Y theory on S2 is equivalent, again, this is sort of like only true in good cases, to this algebra you would produce on the B side, which is kind of a more familiar deformation quantization. So having set up all this language, you can sort of state this result of BFN kind of in this way. Let's see, so now there's also some, say, conjecture slash theorem of Kevin and Davide, which is that, so there are certain vertex algebras that these E3 algebras act on. And on the A side, a big family of them are, for example, given by these kind of CDO type guys. All this POM and CA from the unit to some MA. Again, everything on this side is kind of determined by Y. And that sort of, the theorem slash conjecture is that under this equivalence, there's an isomorphism of modules that sort of, you know, intertwines these actions to some. So on the B side, there are also, I said on the A side, there are also topological boundary conditions. On the B side, there are also kind of chiral boundary conditions. So this is some isomorphism. These are in E3 algebras. These are of factorization algebras, and really as modules for these E3 algebras. And then, again, there's this conjecture theorem of Justin and Phil saying, which says, well, like, you know, you might hope that a lot of this structure really, I've sort of explained that you can deduce it from all these objects in these line operator categories, and, you know, really this should come just from some kind of fundamental identification of the actual line operator categories. And, you know, this isn't sort of true exactly as stated, but let me just kind of leave it at that level of heuristicness. So we can summarize in this language sort of a bunch of different things people are trying to do as sort of carrying out various things that you would sort of like to believe are true from this TFT heuristic. You know, maybe just as like a general philosophical point, like having these big categories with all these properties, like what I said in the beginning, producing such things is like pretty hard, and like especially if you have some desire that at certain category levels they agree with some things that you know and love, that it's really ambitious to try to really do this. But you might try, this is sort of a top-down approach that I explained, but you might imagine you could pursue a kind of bottom-up approach where you started just with like various algebras of endomorphisms or modules that should come up if you have all this categorical structure, and then sort of slowly work your way up to figure out what all these guys should be. And that's kind of how I think about like what I'm trying to do and what various other people are trying to do. I see sort of some results about categories like this as being like kind of to my eye a lot harder than some results just about algebras like this. And so in my own research, you know, I'm trying to do things more like this.
Dylan, yeah. I'm a nitpick. In the first line, yeah. I should either delete the bang or change the B to an A.
So category O on the A side, associated to a variety.
No,
okay.
Well, I think it is. It's not causal duality, though. I didn't write causal dual.
Okay.
I'm just writing the honest.
Okay.
You could write something else. OA of Y is causal dual to OB of Y.
Of Y, exactly. That's something else I could have written, which I didn't write. Yeah, that's right.
I guess my. Okay, fair. So, yeah. Given that the algebras are isomorphic, like,
yes.
That's essentially tautological.
Yeah, except maybe like I guess I wanted to emphasize like the way, for example, you construct this category isn't maybe in like complete, like it's not just like you say like take this algebra mod or something, right? Or mod finitely generated. It's sort of some, well.
Yeah, but it's okay, fair enough.
He's just saying that like right, like you have these, but in this case, like the local operators are literally the same.
Right. Right. And what I was saying is that this category in, say, Ben's work or in your work isn't exactly defined by local operator mod.
Sure.
So it wouldn't like directly follow from something like this. This is somehow more like geometric construction they use to produce some kind of...
I'm not claiming anything that you said is wrong. I'm just claiming that the thing that people call symplectic duality is usually like A side of this one theory and B side of the same theory.
Oh, I see.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Sure. Like, and then there's like a separate equivalence.
I think that's really just kind of, you know, it's basically the isomorphism of the algebras and then some tiny bit of extra information about torus actions matching up.
Yeah, I see what you're saying. Okay, no, I'm sympathetic to that. That like somehow there's some harder thing which is also in BLPW or something, which is like, I mean, I could write, well, whatever. I think,
Basically, it's like, it's not true for the big categories if you stick to the same theory, but if you restrict to O, like somehow.
Right, so you're sort of saying maybe I'll sort of, there's also something which is from here, which is like OB of Y is equivalent to the causal dual of OY shriek B.
Yeah.
Which is maybe a more honest statement of like symplectic duality.
Yeah.
I'm sympathetic.
But sort of the, I mean, I would also say somehow like the way that it appears is rather than Y, A twist. Right? That's where we can actually make some precise statements.
Here and then here.
When Y is of the form, you know, T star of.
Like you're sort of saying what's really proved in your paper is something like the.
Yes.
Well,
leave that there.
Whatever. Yeah.
Change the A and get rid of the B to an A and get rid of the bang. Yeah.
Or, I see.
Yeah, so it's like, yeah.
Wait, but then isn't it just what I.
No, the other bang. So.
I don't know what I'm doing.
Sub Y. On the right hand side.
On the right.
Yeah.
Sub
Y, and then the whole thing is.
Okay, that's the bang you wanted me to delete. Okay, great. Yeah, I'm also happy with that. Great.
And it's not true.
Right.
So, what's the relation between the two lines?
The that second line is essentially like a tautological consequence of the line below. You know, given that, you know, that's not just some random isomorphism, it preserves some extra structure. Like, right? there's this like Hamiltonian torus action. And I mean, all of these statements are sort of like just proven in specific cases, right? That there are certain examples of Ys and Y bangs where we can prove these statements, right? At least that's my understanding.
And the top line is not exactly any kind of work yet, right? Because within the topological theory, a twist or betwixt, you cannot just make the statement.
Yeah.
You need some.
Right, somehow the point of this line of conjectures and theorems, the actual conjecture is like you can construct a Y bang that makes all these statements true.
Yes.
Right? Somehow like, what Bill is reading doesn't involve any Y bang. Mm-hmm. And we don't know, like, that should be the S dual, but like, I don't know, what does that mean?
The theorem.
Right. Probably if I really pressed you, you'd be like, oh, the S-dual is the thing that makes those line of statements true.
Yes.
So in the last line, if I replace D0 with S1, then does it still hold true?
Well, so in this A-type theory, I just sort of said, well, sort of by definition, I said these are the same thing. They're just kind of, it's just a notational distinction. The thing that I'm trying to emphasize by writing a D0 is that, which is, this is just supposed to be a punctured disk, which you're morally supposed to think of as like a kind of holomorphic S1. The thing I'm trying to emphasize is sort of, it's more like a 2D, it's like a category level up from a 2D CFT as opposed to a 2D TFT. So the way that the line operators have an OPE, if you forget that they're a category, it's more like a chiral OPE than like a topological OPE. And I'm trying to write that punctured disk to kind of like remind us of that notationally.
Not that you know this, but the Ruby thing, we upgraded the B twist like a more chiral thing.
Yeah, so that's why I said, you know, this isn't really derivative.
Yeah.
Great. Okay, so now I wanted to talk about maybe how to think about some higher dimensional field theories, just sort of formally, very formally in a similar way. And hopefully maybe it'll shed some kind of light on some of these, sort of how we might try to think about all of these in one picture. So the next theory I want to talk about is the kind of holomorphic topological twist of 4D n equals 2. And again, I'm going to assume that it's at least kind of Lagrangian or something. So maybe it's like a gauge theory or a sigma model or something. So let me call it the Kapustin twist. I would also call this the kind of holomorphic slash B twist of 4D n equals 2. And again, it sort of has the same labeling data of this target, holomorphic symplectic, which I'll just take to be a cotangent bundle for simplicity. So again, I don't really have a guess for the point, but one kind of ansatz that I think works out quite nicely is that, so if we reduce on the punctured disk, we should expect to get some kind of E2 monoidal 2 category, which is like the surface operators. But here, because I did it in the topological direction, it's sort of more going to be like a kind of factorization 2 category, whatever that means. And I think a good ansatz is that this should be sheaves of categories on algebraic loops to YK. Another way of thinking about this is that if you reduce on this kind of chiral circle in this holomorphic slash B twist, you find the sort of Rozinski-Witten theory to the loop space. The ansatz here. And this is sort of let me write this in quotation marks, sort of a factorization. It's line, I'll just say, of surface operators. So the first kind of sanity check of this is that if I try to evaluate on the bubble, so these should now be, I've reduced on something that's like an S2 inside of 4D, so this should be a category of line operators. It should be roughly E3 monoidal, but I kind of reduced on the sort of partially holomorphic bubble. And the answer I'm going to get here from this kind of same calculus is coherent sheaves. On, well, maybe I'll just continue writing it the way I was writing it before. Maps in the bubble to Y. And this is sort of known to be an E1 factorization category. So this means it's sort of, you know, it's almost E3, except two of the directions are holomorphic. These are line operators. And this category has been studied by various people. Sabin Kadis and Harold Williams have some sort of previous and also forthcoming work about this. And also people like Finkelberg and Timbalek and stuff have studied things like the K-theory of this category and related it to these sort of Q deformations of the BFN algebras, which that's another kind of sanity check. I'm not going to talk about that, though. Alternatively, once I'm in this setting, I could play this same Rozinski-Witten game that I played here, because I sort of said, well, like after reducing on this punctured disk, I could imagine I just am here. So I could kind of do this, and this, and this, and see what I get in the presence of this extra punctured disk, right? So what am I going to get? This should be this guy, which I'm now just thinking of as a factorization category. And it has a deformation given by taking this sort of S1 equivariance.
Is this the S1 equivariance or is it twisted?
This one? Oh, this is not S1 equivariant. I'm about to turn on S1 equivariants. So this factorization category, what is it? This is line operators to the extent that you can make sense of it in the holomorphic twist. Well, I'll just write holomorphic 3D n equals 4. Which is what you expect if you reduce on a disk. And then this deformation to the S1 equivariance, again, this is going to deform us to the D module category.
Do you really do S1 equivariance, or how do you twist the compactification to 0 times S1, where the 0 rotates by an amount Q when it goes around S1?
I think I'm really just taking S1 equivariance here. You might imagine that I was trying to get something fancier than what I'm getting. I'm not trying to get any kind of like K-theoretic construction. I'm just going to say this is the same A-twisted. I'm just making the statement. If you reduce on the topological circle, you get 3D holomorphic. You reduce equivariantly, you get 3D A-twist. So this is sort of in the same space. This is just as before. This was, you know, the sort of 3D on the punctured disk and the sort of A twist to the same guy. Same thing. This is line operators in A. Okay. So now there are a couple natural objects in here. Basically, because we have these two circles, there are units for both circles now. there's sort of the holomorphic disk that fills in the punctured disk, and there's the topological disk that fills in the S1. So let me make sure I get this right. So if I take first this guy, this is going to give me just D. Is it DYK? Well, I'm just going to look at my notes so I don't have to force myself to re-remember. No, this is going to give me, say, again, I'll turn on this S1 equivariance. Oh, right, of course. And if instead I fill in the other disk, this is just going to give me D. YK, or and so let me add to this picture. Basically, what I'm proposing as well, there's some like lift of this picture where we kind of have this plane, and now instead of a line, it's kind of crossed with an extra copy of R2. But I'm thinking of it as being rotated by this kind of S1 rotation, and so I'm drawing it like a cigar, and kind of reducing on this S1 circle is going to produce the picture that was above. And you can think, like, what do these things lift to under this picture? These disks lift precisely to a full holomorphic disk times the S1 here. So these sort of lift to and that's sort of in keeping with what we see there. And basically, we just see this exact same picture showing up in this 4D setting. And this is kind of this omega background quantization from 4D n equals 2 of these boundary chiral algebras. And they're sort of the same boundary chiral algebras. That you can see, like, these objects now, these are the same guys that I just had in this story. Just the same gadgets. Maybe I never really wrote M before, but it was DYK. OK. Great. Are there any questions about that?
So if you take HOM from one to the other.
Right. So that's the same HOM that was computed here. You'll get this space of sections, because D co-represents O sections of this guy, and it's this CD O's to Y. Again, I'm sort of ignoring the possibility of anomalies, which we know is actually an issue, but
it's also kind of an S3, morally speaking.
What's that?
It's morally speaking an S3.
What I reduced on here. Yeah, that's right.
From one to the other.
Right, exactly. So basically, the statement is that.
So this might help understand mathematically why the Schur index gives you the character of the Carnot algebra.
Oh, interesting. Yeah. Okay, nice. Yeah, I like that picture. Yeah. So this statement is this is a model for like a mixed holomorphic topological three sphere.
Yes.
S3 kind of holomorphic.
Okay. Say some words about an holomorphic topological structure on S3, something like a contact structure, how do you call it?
Transverse holomorphic foliation or whatever. Yeah. Yeah. Anyway, okay, so this is.
So,
the next story.
You interpret this as saying that the chiral differential operators are the.
Yeah, they're the local operators when you turn on the omega background in the holomorphic topological twist of 4D n equals 2.
Yes.
That's the statement. And that's sort of what I kind of explained here, is that that is sort of the same statement as the statement that was in Kevin and Davide's paper a few years ago now, sort of saying that these CDOs show up on the boundary of A-type 3D n equals 4. And so that's like one of those two, that's this factorization algebra, and then there's something kind of more complicated on the B side that should match it. Maybe it's worth saying, so I mentioned this line operators in the holomorphic twist. So in the 3D n equals 2 setting, there's also this sort of forthcoming work of Kevin and Davide and Tudor about sort of using a similar strategy to quantize the boundary local operators in 3D n equals 2 and produce some vertex algebras, which are morally modules for some kind of, so this is a bit harder to make sense of, but sort of BFN type E3 algebra that you would cook up from this kind of guy. But I'm not an expert on that. Maybe other people know better than me even. Okay, so now let me try, I'm making surprisingly good time here. Let me try to say a little bit about some kind of more inventive things you could try to do with this similar sort of setup. So what I'm going to discuss now, I sort of discussed reducing a 4D theory in a single omega background. This is the physics terminology for what I explained, and producing a chiral algebra. And I said that like the chiral algebra you ultimately end up producing, it's like a HOM in some factorization category between two objects, or maybe it's a composition of factorization functors kind of to and from VEC. So now I'm going to try to explain, well, what would happen if you tried to upgrade this story if you went to 6D and you tried to reduce on two omega backgrounds or maybe on some kind of toric surface and you wanted to produce a vertex algebra in analogy with this. Use the same strategy, a dimension up. So so there's this kind of mysterious 6D n equals 2, 0 theory. One of the only, well, there are a lot of things one can know about it. It's really not one of the only. One fact about it is that if you reduce it on two circles, which I'm going to be thinking of as like the circles in the omega backgrounds, you'd get 4D n equals 4. And then if you reduce on a further punctured disk, you'd expect to find kind of the category of surface operators in the 4D n equals 4. So kind of reasonable ansatz in this situation is that if I reduce on all three of these things, so I'm now describing the category, you know, a factorization 2 category of surface defects in the 4D n equals 4 theory. And the ansatz is that this should be sort of, I mean, maybe I'll just write it. Sort of G of K categories, so this is some two category of categories with a strong action of G of K at some level C. And what's really going on is there's kind of a T2 equivariance, and this C is kind of the ratio of these H bar parameters. Let me write epsilon 1 over epsilon 2. So this is some, this is sort of in quotation marks, some kind of factorization 2 category. And now there are a bunch of natural objects that show up here that come from, again, all of the different fillings of these different disks, right? So if I fill the holomorphic disk, I kind of get the chiral unit, the unit for the sort of factorization structure. It's some object in here. And what is it? It's C twisted D modules on the affine gross. And then there's this sort of work of Gyota-Witten that tells you what happens when you fill these S1s with D2s coming down from 6D. So let me say, first fill the second one. So I'm imagining I came down from 6D and then I fill it. There's a funny kind of non-commutativity thing going on, which, well, whatever, let me not comment on it. So if I do this, I'm supposed to find, so this is, I'm going to just call U for the unit. Here, I'm supposed to find what I'll call the Neumann boundary condition, which is sort of G hat modules at level C, You can also think of this as sort of co-representing the weak G of K invariants, maybe co-invariants, whatever. And finally, if I sort of first reduced on the two disk, coming down from 60, then I should, like, this is kind of a standard gauge theory thing that explains this, but then there's this kind of spooky 60 magic that tells you, well, you should find, well, let me call it like this, but the point is this thing co-represents sort of Whitaker invariants. I'll call this W for Whitaker, some kind of other fancy object in this category. But anyway, so these are some surface defects that come from sort of half disks in analogy with this story. And let me just try to draw a picture of how I want to think about this working.
So why are the two S1s different?
Why are the two S1s different? Like, why does it make a difference? Well, I mean, I feel like you probably sort of know this or something. If you reduce from the 60 theory and you have a cigar tip, the induced boundary condition in 5dn equals 2 is a nonpole. But that's something that's like very weird. It's telling you like the 60 theory couldn't be a gauge theory. If you were in a gauge theory, the cigar tip always has some kind of boring description that you just know from like writing down spaces of fields and stuff. It gives a kind of Neumann type boundary condition. So if you kind of are first go to 5dn equals 2 and then you reduce on a cigar tip, you just find Neumann for 4dn equals 4. But if you reduce first on the cigar tip, you find this weird like non-pole boundary condition, which then it's for 5dn equals 2, you reduce on a circle, then it becomes a boundary condition for 4dn equals 4.
So how does it matter? You write d0 times s1 times d2, and then you write d0 times
s2. It's because switching the rules of the s1 is like s-duality, right?
Okay.
Yeah, it's something weird about the 60 theory. I kind of briefly made a comment, but like, yeah. Yeah, this is something very strange. Usually this kind of thing doesn't happen, but this is kind of.
There's a local geometric lattice and tells you that the GK cap is the same as G dual K dual cap. And then the unit goes to the unit, M goes to W, and W goes to M.
Yeah, so these are kind of switched under. Yeah, this factors through the kind of four topological one holomorphic twist of 60, and you're thinking like these are topological circles and this is the chiral circle. So now in analogy with this kind of picture, I want to produce some kind of vertex algebra living over this guy from sort of now having two omega backgrounds. And roughly speaking, what's going to happen? So before there, I emphasized, well, you just kind of get this one line, you label it by a category, a factorization category, and you have these functors to and from it, and it gives you an algebra. So now you're going to get some kind of picture like this. I want to imagine that the sort of inside of this, maybe I should show, is labeled by this two category. Let me call it sort of bold C. And now on each of these lines, instead of just a factorization category, you're going to have like a factorization category internal to this factorization two category. So these should be labeled by some kind of objects. Well, let me, my convention is like this. And then the analog of those M and U are going to be some kind of functors between these G of K factorization categories. And this whole data associated to this, you're going to get a kind of trace of some factorization endofunctor. And this object, whatever it is, just for some kind of formal categorical reasons, this is going to give you a factorization algebra on whatever this auxiliary space is. I guess I'll keep calling it A1. So this produces some vertex algebras, kind of an analogy with that story, but with two omega background directions. But now you see that there's like a much richer game you can play, where instead of just here, I just sort of drew R2 with the two omega backgrounds, you could have any kind of toric surface, and you can, from a picture like this, produce some kind of labeled diagram like this, do this kind of TFT endofunctor trace, produce this factorization algebra, and this produces a whole bunch of kind of cool gadgets. So let me just give a quick example of kind of an application of this. Yeah, I'll just take 5 minutes. Okay, so if I take a Riemann surface, maybe with some labels of punctures, and I imagine that I'm just crossing this with sort of an omega background in the normal direction, and then there's always this ambient extra factor of the kind of plane that everything is a factorization algebra on. When I perform this reduction, I'll get some picture that kind of looks like the following. So here there's kind of two circles, whereas here there's only one. And so here I find kind of C. Here I find C tensor squared. And then I get a bunch of labelings here. So there's another object that comes from sort of the, if you put an extra label on this two disk, which kind of corresponds to these markings I wrote here on these, then whatever, you can produce some other objects. And you get these sort of labeled diagrams, and there are these natural sort of factorization, natural transformations around. And this whole data is supposed to give you some chiral algebra. And in this example, it'll give you the sort of class S chiral algebra for this surface with these punctures.
Sorry, how do you turn on omega deformation algebra?
So now, well, basically, as long as you have a circle, like away from the punctures, you're OK. But then I agree there's something like a little bit fishy. And what it has to do with is the fact that I've been a little bit sloppy about the labels. Like if you go back here, if you kind of think about the way that the equivariant parameters enter, you sort of, they enter from kind of a different, how can I say this? You know what, let me explain after. But basically it has to do with there's some constraint that all of the levels match up in such a way that you can actually make sense of this trace. Because there's a whole bunch of levels, like really, when you have an angled line, you get an object that corresponds to, like the object you thought you had, but then you kind of twist it by tensoring with some line bundle to make it sort of enter in the category at a different level than it was supposed to be. Anyway, that's as much as I can say for now. But the thing I want to emphasize is that if I kind of first reduce in this direction, I can kind of produce just a category, a factorization category, and some factorization functors. And this category is going to sort of be the class S 3D n equals 4 line operator category. And this is sort of the 3D n equals 4 class S chiral boundary condition in the sense of sort of Kevin and Davide. And then using this philosophy, which I guess maybe many people have known, but I really learned from kind of talking with Justin and Phil, that sort of 3D mirror symmetry is really just the lift of S-duality after slab compactifying down to 3D. So here there'll be some corresponding, basically you apply local Langlands to all the objects and all the functors in this picture, you get some other picture. Again, you could reduce, let's call this sort of CA, and the resulting category you'll find here is CB, and the kind of factorization algebra you'll produce from this perspective is supposed to be the kind of the B-type boundary condition, or the B-type boundary factorization algebra, or the chiral boundary condition in sort of the B-type 3D n equals 4, but again for the same class S theory. And you can, if you basically, there's this, again, it's a similar idea to what Justin and Phil saying kind of had in mind, at the level of the line operator categories, but you can sort of use local Langlands, if you believe in it, to prove that these sort of pairs of factorization algebras should actually be equivalent. You could also like produce some more explicit procedures for trying to construct them, but anyway, this gives like a kind of conjecture about a whole bunch of ways of producing boundary chiral algebras that are supposed to match up under this 3D mirror symmetry, which is kind of a partial solution to this conjecture of Kevin and Davide about this 3D mirror symmetry of boundary chiral algebras.
And what attempt to produce Rakawa's recipe for the boundary, for the Rakawa's classes?
What's that?
You can probably try to produce Rakawa's.
Right, so I think I gave a talk about this before and I explained that this side kind of concretely just produces Arakawa's construction. This just explicitly gives the exact same thing he would say, so there's not really anything new. I think there's something cool though, which is like this side doesn't produce what he would say. This side says, well, you should take like Rozensky-Witten theory to this weird, like this sort of looks like Rozensky-Witten to flat G, maybe check. And then there's some kind of chiral Oppers type boundary condition for this Rozensky-Witten theory. And the prediction is like that you should also be able to produce the same class as chiral algebras, but from this perspective, which is sort of totally novel. I think it's pretty cool. So I'll stop there.
Are there any quick questions? Or long questions.
We can also, of course, stop questions. Yeah.
So you have to like actually find like the mirror to Dirichlet to do this.
That's right.
Like T of G, which is like pretty gross.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
Okay.
Somehow you should think on that side. Like I claimed in a sort of mysterious way, the boundary conditions here correspond to some labelings of the disks, which were, on this side, when you really think of it as Rozensky-Witten theory, the sort of flat G sigma D, it actually, the kind of, you're really seeing the data of the kind of singularity type constraint that you're putting on the flat connection at the puncture. And that's what informs the boundary condition on this side. And that's maybe kind of familiar, like you see things like these, like you said, OTOG, you see things like these flags coming from, the sort of
puncture.
Yeah. So that's kind of what it manifests on this side.
No, I was just wondering how like easy it was to actually pull right down that other square. And I think GLN.
I think it's tricky is the answer. Yeah, it's tricky. But I kind of have a more down-to-earth perturbative approximation of a whole bunch of calculations kind of like this, which maybe you heard about from me last week or something. So in the case where your surface is just like a curve kind of times this, and you can use that strategy to produce at least like some version.
And can you see like these like alternate Naum and alternate Neumann?
Like your
effect
and...
Yeah, from this reduction perspective, do those come
from? Well, I mean, that's sort of like a question for Davide, right?
Yeah, so
like, does vect show up in some natural way from 6D? Like the object vect in the local Langlands category? Phil,
We don't understand the difference between...
Yeah, I don't want to say... Love things. You could try to put irregular singularities or to produce alternative Neumann. I would have to think about it a bit, but I'm not sure.
Well, I mean, maybe you could also, there's some concrete questions. You know whatever the mirror to vect is supposed to be, maybe. Now, and so if you think like, is there some way, an analogy with P of G being related to this singularity type of a flat connection or a mass bundle? Could you think about it being related to a singularity type of a...
See, the fact that those don't exist for generic epsilons, right? But only one of the covariant parameters is set to zero should be a piece of information, a hint at the very least, right? Whatever you're doing if you try to do something geometric like you're doing up there, it cannot be equivalent under notations.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Right.
So it should be something that sort of depends sensitively on some level constraint. That's basically here.
I think irregular singularity could do that, but.
I mean, like, we know, like, what the objects are, I guess. Like, when you have, like, your equal sign, like, on, like, the right-hand side, we know what to put there. But the thing that we don't understand is, like, can you get that from 6D or from some kind of...
Yeah. But maybe he was sort of suggesting, like, well, if you know the properties, like, do your objects sort of exist, and is there a uniform definition for all level?
No.
And if there's not, that's sort of a good sign that there might indeed be a geometric incarnation, but it, like, it has to do with the cap.
I hear you use the D2, right? If you want to do the alternative Neumann, presumably the D2 must contain something in the middle which ruins rotation. Otherwise, you would have equivalence.
Yeah, I mean, I guess the way I was thinking about it, it could also be about sort of the fact that, okay. Yeah, that's
you could ask yourself, how do you get normal boundary conditions in 5D EMLs, starting from 6D?
Neumann in the sense of that.
Just not. Well, we can also think about twisted in which way inside, but yeah, Neumann. And you, in your answer to Latch, you're saying the 6D theory is fancy, so when you reduce it on a cigar, you don't get Neumann.
Yeah.
Then what gives you Neumann? Right? And the answer from that I know is that you get Neumann if you take a cigar, but at the tip you put an irregular singularity of a very specific type.
So we could have to do with just, again, you might hope there's another singularity type modification.
I mean, a very silly way to think about it is first, how do you get Dirichlet?
Yeah.
Dirichlet by putting a regular puncture, a full puncture there.
Yeah.
What is Neumann? Neumann is what you get when you take Dirichlet and you gauge the Kolbach symmetry. So you want to just gauge the global symmetry of your regular puncture. So you're adding 4D gauge fields to only gauge the global symmetry of the regular puncture. So if you can understand the statement, you'll know what you do.
Is there supposed to be anything special that happens with these chiral algebras at the strange levels?
Yes. But, right. So, yeah, I'm not sure if it's correct to say to the chiral algebra. Okay, sorry. Yes, I think they have special extensions or things like that. You can get other chiral algebras by extending the... So that you get large commuting subalgebras in the category of modules.
For special values.
For special values of the level.
Yeah.
I see, but that's not that kind of same kind of thing. It's like replacing like Neumanns with alternate Neumann.
Yeah,
that's not that kind of thing.
You can understand that kind of behavior from this kind of equivariant localization picture, where somehow if you're at a totally generic value of the equivariant parameters, you kind of expect only the fixed points and the surface, the toric surface, to contribute. And then somehow when you hit the special values where there's suddenly a fixed line, and this big commuting subalgebra comes up and kind of you tensor the vertices that are joined by that edge kind of over that.
Yes, something like that. But the details I'm kind of like clicking
on it, but again, in progress.
At some point I want to do it, but have not.
Yeah. Hopefully I'll turn it back to it. Okay, well, let's...